Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
This is live call-in radio, and the phone lines are now open. All the car guys are gone. The magic number is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. So you have questions about your portfolio. You're wondering what on earth is going on with the market. I thought it was going up, and it looks like it's going down. Well, this is called round and round we go, really. We are a consolidation period. Yeah, it's going down, but it hasn't gone down far enough yet to stay awake all night. But anyway, you want to talk about something in your portfolio. You've been recommended a change, an addition, a subtraction. We'll give you a second opinion. All you have to do is pick up the phone and punch in those numbers, because there's a few of you probably still have dials, but we don't even have dial phone anymore. But
yeah,
Yeah. We still have landline, and we have touch tone. Punch in the numbers, 888-312-5757. Okay, Perry, I know we have an agenda here today, but I'm going to interrupt it with a question.
That's shocking. Go right ahead.
What on earth do you think you would do with a 15-pound original pan Pizza Hut pizza?
A 15-pound pizza?
Yeah.
Well, I would have to, first I'd probably call my kids. I'm going to need some more fingers to grab a slice of that thing.
Well, actually, you wouldn't have to do that, because it's actually a blanket.
Ah.
They made a 15-pound with gravity blankets. Apparently extra weight when you sleep. Extra weight on top of you, not extra weight in your body.
Yeah, those
extra
are big
weight
deal
on
these
top
days.
Of you. Is supposed to help you sleep better. And they have a 6-foot round original pan, 15-pound blanket for $150. It sold out in one day.
Wow.
So look for them on Etsy or eBay, because
they're popular.
They apparently are. Popular.
Right, wonder, right, if you get a heavier blanket, do they make a pizza with more toppings? Is that how that works? What do you, you put sausage on that? Yeah, I'm gonna.
I said, well, you know, you want to buy something that's in high demand so you can sell it for a higher price, right?
I'm guessing that's something most people don't have either. So you're probably safe giving that one. They don't have one of those already.
Well, back onto this more serious news here. The again, if you want to talk to us about something serious with regard to the market and your portfolio, it's 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757. So we have been waiting the most part of the year for a vaccine to solve the big problem in society around the world today, and that is COVID. Well, the vaccine-producing companies, pharmaceuticals, Big Pharma, the nasty boogeyman of the politics, is actually coming through. Operation Warp Speed has worked like we have never seen anything before in vaccine generation. And in the beginning of this, I was one of the very vocal skeptics that we could get this done, because you're normally looking at 5 to 10 years to develop a vaccine. But here we are with announcements from Pfizer. We also have Moderna, and Moderna announced, you know, they think they're basically 95% effective in their trials. So both of them are after the FDA for emergency authorization to go live. I mean, they're already producing it. They want to be able to distribute it. And I was, we're waiting for the show to start, and listening to Fox Business, and they interviewed the CEO of Moderna. And the issue has been, how do you get this stuff out of production to where it needs to be because of the dry ice kind of temperatures that are required to preserve it. And the Moderna CEO said, well, it's not going to be quite that bad. They actually can transport this at minus 20 degrees instead of minus 80. And that's a big difference. And he said, once it gets to a pharmacy, like CVS, for instance, they'll have freezers which are commercially available that can store it. And that once there, once it's defrosted, it actually has a one-month shelf life instead of the 5 days that it looked like just a month ago. So all of that's good news. Mm-hmm. The big question is whether or not it's actually going to be well accepted by the people who are in need of it. But that authorization is not going to be long in coming.
Right. The my sister's a surgical nurse, and she's already talking about these vaccines, and they're pretty surprised that they're already out. And they're also talking about how, seeing as they're healthcare workers, they're going to be probably some of the first ones to get dosed, and they're not unhappy about it. But it's always like, well, that was fast. And it's like, maybe I wish I wasn't first in line for this vaccine, but they're going to get it. They're not going to get asked if they want it. It's going to be like, you want to go to work? Here, you're going to get a shot today. So off you go.
Well, and it's a two-shot system. And I was speaking with one of our professional contacts down in Waco who works with a lot of staff in a hospital. And they know it's coming their way, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are a little skeptical because it's never been developed this way. And once you get your vaccine, nobody knows yet whether or not that means you cannot still be a transmitter.
To be determined. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So you may still be walking around infecting other people thinking, I'm okay because I got my double shot. Yeah, that has a new meaning, doesn't it?
Now the world's changing, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, the advent of the vaccine is that it has changed what is working in the market. All the things that looked like they were going to benefit from WFH, work from home.
Yeah.
Well, maybe because we have vaccines available, we can go back to life as it used to be. Back to the office, back to the movie theater, dining out. No, I can't do that. Not yet, anyway.
Right.
I mean, this has really created great conflict here, both in the markets and in society, because we need to be able to operate businesses. And politicians don't seem to understand that when the businesses are closed, tax revenue falls. And yet they want to spend more money. And so I was asked a couple of times this last week, where are they getting the money?
It's always a mystery. But if you're a government, it's different. you can. It's a ledger entry, so you can just produce the funds.
Well, and an associated question is, but they keep printing money. Yeah. That's inflationary. I mean, how much of this debt can we stand? We've had a couple of those phone calls.
Yep.
And the bottom line is the government prints money, but if it doesn't go into circulation, there's no inflation. And we get money into circulation by the government putting it into the banking system, and the bank lends money. And we have a fractional banking system. We should call that a fictional one, maybe.
True.
But in any event, it's fractional, which means you deposit your, let's say you got $1,000 check, paycheck, and you deposit it in the bank. The bank has reserves that they're required, so they keep $100 for reserves. They can now lend $900 to somebody else who puts it in their bank, and the process is repeated. 10% for reserves and 90% lent out. It's that lending out that increases money supply, that increases demand, and there is where you get inflation. We have kind of the opposite. One, the banks aren't lending money very freely. I mean, if you're really good credit, really secure job, and plenty of collateral, they're still your friend. But if you're missing any one of those three legs, they're going to be polite, but they'll think about it.
And it doesn't matter that the bank is flush with cash. They're not sure. They're not confident in your ability to repay, so you don't get the loan. And banks are in that spot right now where there's a lot of people not qualified for a loan, and there's also a rather large group that don't want the loan. You know, the individual balance sheets across the United States have been improving during during COVID, during the shutdowns, because people are actually paying down their debt with some of those stimulus dollars that were supposed to end up in the economy. So, you know, inflation is really not an issue at this point, and it won't be. And like I said, Don, until those dollars get out into the economy and start chasing goods and services, and that's when inflation can begin to rise.
And what the banks are actually looking at is the exact opposite. There's not been a lot of news about bankruptcies, but bankruptcies are increasing, and they're increasing in size as businesses have run out of the payroll support. They're out of money. And that means that loans go into default. There's nothing to collect or very little. I mean, I mentioned in one of my professional webinars this last week or so that Simon Properties, which owns a lot of big malls, let the loan they had on the Kansas City Independence Mall, one of the biggest, if not the biggest in the country, they owed $200 million. It was coming due, and there was no way they were going to be able to pay it, so they just gave it back to the bank. Remember back in 08 and 09, there was the jingle mail?
Sure.
And homeowners were mailing their keys
just
back to the bank.
Send the keys in. Yep, we're gone.
Well, that's what Simon did with Independence Mall. It was a $200 million loan, went into bankruptcy, went into auction, and it sold for just under $25 million. That is $150 million of monetary contraction, which is, when it continues to be more and more of those kinds of events, that is a deflationary factor in the economy. So worrying about government printing money excessively in the current environment is not inflationary. It has to reverse this process. We have to get through the bankruptcies, which may take a couple more years before we know the real extent of this problem.
Sure. The stimulus money was not exactly out there to stimulate. It was just there to keep everybody from going bankrupt at the same time. But now that we're going to go through a second round of shutdowns, depending on where you are, you know, companies that managed to scramble and keep their heads above water through the first one, they're not going to make it through the next one. So there's just not enough money to hand out to all those companies to keep them afloat.
So when we have spoken about the market leadership over years past, we have constantly said, if you take out the 10 tech stocks, maybe 11, the market doesn't look so good. Stocks have been cratering since the middle of 18. Well, if not cratering, they've been slowly sinking as profits have diminished, sales have fallen, and the economy has cycled. Tax cuts helped create some temporary stimulus, but the big leaders have been a handful of tech stocks. And at the bottom of the market back in March, coming out of that 34% decline on the S&P, there were basically five stocks that were like rocket ships off the bottom.
They were. They really were. And it was almost magical the way they continued to go up. But what is also magical is our first segment's over. So we're going to have to get out of here, take a break here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our monthly webinar coming up on December 5th what's going on out there in the stock market. If you'd like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page, a couple of clicks, and you will get an email back with a link in it. And at about 9:15 on December 5th, just click that link, and you're going to be live on the air with us and online with us, excuse me. And we're going to go through what the market's doing out there, what we think is going on, some things that may help you navigate the market and your personal economy. And we would also welcome all of your questions. It's a really good time to get some clarity on anything in your portfolio that's giving you pause at the current time. Again, go to iriradio.com. If you have questions for us this morning, give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Here we go there. What are they going to give for them? I'm at $600 down here now, 10 and now, 25 and now, 35 and now, 50 now, 60, will you give me 60 now, 75, 75, another $85 on the bottom there.
Well, the stock market is an auction market, and actually, if you go to the CBOE, you can actually bid on hogs, just like that guy is.
You can, you bet.
But we're talking about stocks, and the isolation, the concentration, I guess a better word, of the handful of stocks that were leading the way coming off the March bottom. But that condition has changed. And it basically, I guess, like COVID, it is infectious because we're now pushing something over 80% of the entire range of stocks are above their 200-day moving average, which officially says this is bull market territory. And we've had a flood of new money. The last 2 weeks, the money flowing out of equity mutual funds and equity exchange-traded funds has reversed, and the money is coming out of bonds and cash back into those equities. And it reminds me, I think it was Warren Buffett who said, investors buy the most at the top and the least at the bottom. And with that, statistically, we know from a lot of academic study that once you get into a market that is very highly priced, it gets more and more difficult to generate historic returns. Well,
it's one of those bad news is, I mean, good news is bad news things. It's like, hey, everybody's buying stocks. It's like, well, that's really great, except, yeah, it's really not, because it's really getting to be that everybody is buying stocks. And it's kind of one of the truths of the stock markets is that once everybody is doing something, that's probably not what you want to be doing. And right now, the money is coming into the market.
Well, and the most recent update that I saw on the AAII Bull Bear Report is that the bulls, this is the American Association of Independent Investors, they're at 55.8%, which is a bull ratio of 69, and that is historically high enough that it has always preceded declines. Now, we don't know that one's imminent, but one's much more probable than a decline would have been 6 months ago when we'd already watched it happen. So we don't know. All we know is you have to watch stuff, because from these levels, if you're assuming I can buy and hold another 10 years, what's the difference? Well, from these levels, the next 10-year historic rate of return of the market of 9% is highly improbable. In fact, if we just look over the last 20 years, it hasn't happened yet. The average return of stocks, the S&P 500, over the last two decades is barely over 4. So where's that long-term average that people build their portfolios on? It's missing.
Correct.
Missing in action.
And it's so important to look at, you know, what's going on in the market now. We talk about that all the time. The average of the past 80 years doesn't matter much. It's what's going on now. And we were just talking about the vaccine, and it's important to remember that the vaccine showed up when the market was, after the market was already high. It didn't show up at market lows. It showed up near market highs and then pushed the market even higher. So it's like I said, Don, it's not that we think things are about to go in the tank. We don't. We have no idea on the timing. No one does. It's just that we are at elevated levels here, and there's a lot of new money coming in the market right now. So it's you need to be alert. You need to be paying attention to what's going on out there right now.
The near-term approval of the vaccines for administration has caused rotation in the market. People, instead of focusing on Zoom, for instance, things that people are going to, Amazon, Apple, anything you can buy online, are now looking at, well, maybe life will return to something close to normal. And so cruise lines, airlines, hotels, restaurants, they are back at the top of the list, for at least for speculators, looking forward, assuming that, one, the vaccine's going to work, and that governments will quit closing down business and let life actually return to some normalcy. But we're going to be missing a whole bunch of businesses because there's a ton of them that are not going to open their doors again.
Correct. They're just not going to come back. They've been hurt too bad. They've been shut down too long. So many of small businesses are month-to-month operations as is, and they can go on for decades like that. But when you have a massive interruption of their income stream, they can't weather that storm. They're not a huge corporation with reserves in place. They need income consistently or they're not going to make it, and that's where they are. And that's those bankruptcies really haven't hit yet, but they're coming up shortly here.
So while the attention has been on the virus, there are other factors that are actually contributing to this or have contributed to it, and that's the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve and Treasury happen to be in a little bit of a dispute because the Treasury wants some of the money back that they gave the Fed earlier in the year. And you know, government agencies, once they get money, man, they do not want to give it back.
You mean my money? You want my money back? Wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, the money the Treasury has asked for is money that the Fed mostly jawboned about how it was going to use it. And a lot of people tried to front run the bond market, thinking the Fed was going to step in. And they kind of put their toe in the bond market water, but then they took it out. And so I think Treasury has a legitimate argument. You guys didn't use the money. Jawboning worked. We'll just jawbone the deal again. But we have other factors that have given people a lot of money to spend. How about not having to pay rent or make a mortgage payment?
Correct.
Yeah. We have political outcomes, which some of which are still being resolved. We have a change in housing demand. I mean, with people moving out of the city because businesses are saying, yeah, we can make this work from home work. That's okay. We have phenomenally low mortgage rates. All these things are factors. It's not just the vaccine. And when our next webinar, first Saturday of December, I don't have my calendar up in front of me.
December 5th.
We're going to try and address how these things are working out at the time. And if you want a better understanding of what's going on in the market, register at our website, irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks in your email, and you will be set. If you cannot attend, you will get a replay link to watch it on your own time as often as you are fascinated by the information we share. And part of what we've been through is near-term history, but it will not be long in stock market terms that February and March are classified as ancient history.
Correct.
Because there will be some new big deal that is going to show up. Nothing operates in a vacuum, and that's part of the problem for investors. And how do I deal with all this information that's coming through? And you rely on just long-term average returns. It is our professional opinion that that is going to disappoint you simply because this really is a new world. And we just look at the last 20 years in the stock market, averaging barely 4%, when the long-term returns say you should be earning 9% for your stock portfolio, and it's not happening. So how much later, how much longer do you actually have to wait to catch up to actually achieve that average return? And it may be longer than you have.
It's a long time. We talked about that. It was a couple of weeks ago now, Don, but we were talking about the top 10% of the wealthy in the United States asked, what's the biggest investing mistake you've ever made? Number one on the list was using average rates of return to make any investment decisions whatsoever. That was the biggest mistake they made on the way to getting wealthy, was, wow, I got to stop doing that right away. And after you just take a step back and take a look at it, it becomes very obvious why. Of course, it's completely disconnected from reality of what's going on right now. And that's the problem. It's just that's what, 90% of the any financial advice companies out there in the United States, that's what they're telling you. Well, we're just going to give you this average portfolio based on average rates of returns over the last 80 years, because it's really easy for us. It's simple for us that way. But it's not going to be that good for you. And so if you're talking to people who have become wealthy, that's the biggest mistake they say they made. Don't don't base any investment decisions on average long-term returns.
I think it's break time. That's easy enough to take a break now and come back and pick up a new subject.
No problem. We will get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone again that on December 5th, we are having our next webinar. You can register for that at iriradio.com. And if you're not getting our weekly newsletter, the Week in Review, which is just a look back at the subjects of this week, give you a little idea about what's important and what are some of the things that you can ignore, you can sign up for that at help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name, and we will get you on the list. You will begin receiving that on Monday. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Muddy road ahead, detour. Paid no mind to what it said, detour. All these bitter things I find should have read.
I'd actually like to find some of the music from the old Roadrunner cartoons where Wile E. Coyote has just discovered that he's no longer on terra firma, and he's about ready to collapse 1,000 or 1,500 feet to the valley below, because in many ways that illustration is exactly what we are facing as we approach the end of December for millions of Americans who have been benefiting from the various payroll supplemental programs that governments at both state and federal level initiated in response to COVID. We have a ton of programs that are about to expire, not just the one that the Treasury has asked back from the Fed, but payroll programs. And the unemployment insurance programs, roughly 12 million people are facing a late December cutoff. And we have the end of forbearance on student loans, mortgages, lending facilities to small businesses, and in some cases, local governments, lease forbearance. Deadline is fast approaching. And so far, we have masked over the economic impact of all those people who have not been making payments, who have not been required to make payments. That day's coming due on the mortgage deal. I learned I had made an error, an assumption. I thought that they just simply were going to extend the term of the mortgage, add the deferred payments into the balance. But apparently, you have to renegotiate with your lender by March.
Right. That is one of the options. There are people that are going to be able to do that, but that doesn't mean everybody will be. And if... You know, most Americans, their personal economy is not going to be ready for, well, how are we doing on, three or four missed mortgage payments? Can we just, you can send me the check for that, right?
Not so much.
And the answer is no. Yeah, no, they can't. And there are, you know, a lot of people that have been in that forbearance program, both for rent and for mortgages. And student loans, that's a huge amount of money outstanding as student loans. And those are all coming to a halt unless something changes between now and the end of the year. But it hasn't changed yet, and now we're in transition politically, and that always adds a little extra confusion to see if something's going to get done. But that really is a stepping off a cliff for a lot of people out there.
Well, for about 9 million people who have been on the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, that program expires 2 weeks before the end of the year. So it's going to look like Grinch showed up, not Santa. And that puts pressure on families. And how do we deal with this? And how do the markets deal with it? Some of that money early on was being used to buy stocks. People not having to make a mortgage or a lease payment, not having to make a car payment, and the government sending you more money. Happy days are here again. And a lot of that money went into the stock market early on in the recovery process. And it has driven what some people would refer to as insanity in the markets.
Right. Definitely was a huge increase in the number of new investors, small investors, everybody out there taking a shot because, hey, it's a great place to make some money, which is that's usually the that spells bad news down the road if you are just playing in the stock market. It's no place to play. But that is something that everyone has to deal with. And trying to figure out whether or not those kinds of programs are going to be continued. And you know, we're not big on government programs in general. We don't think that should be the way the country works. But when it is the government that told you can't work, someone has to fill the gap. And that's where we are right now.
So we've mentioned a couple of times in the last segments rotation. I mean, we've had rotation in the stock market from a handful of stocks to a much broader rise in the number of issues that are doing much, much better above the 200-day. And there's a problem with low average returns because of the bear markets that we've had, unless you want to assume they'll never occur again, which is what modern portfolio theory assumes. You'll never have one in your lifetime because they only occur once every 500 years.
Not to worry, sure.
Yeah, just don't count the 18 we've or the 17 that we've already had in the last decade or the last century in this one. But with all of that stuff that's rotating, what do we do to deal with it? Because we basically manage money for clients, and that is instead of looking back over the last 40, 60, 90 years. We look at what's happening actually now. Where is the rotation in the market? Where is leadership in the market? What portions of the market are doing well that are magnets for money? If they're magnets for money, investors like them, and that means there's demand. Demand pushes prices higher. Rotate the portfolio into areas of strength. You own things that aren't working? Well, you're not going to retire on hope. So if you own things that aren't working, they should come out of the portfolio and put in something that is. Well, somebody has to pay attention. Most investors don't want to pay attention like that. You really have to spend some time to figure out how to do that. But it's not rocket science. You do not need a PhD to manage money. Well, you can. And if you're heavy into math, there are a lot of math formulas that you can use. But I don't know if we're going to get to the article on that today or not, because we're running out of time. But there's a lot of research that basically says spend all your time on PEs, price earnings, price sales, price to book, free cash flow. Learn the formulas. Know the difference between the quick and the current ratios and read the footnotes. That's what Warren Buffett says. Read the footnotes. Sure. And then go to sleep. But reality is those formulas are not a panacea to success. In fact, one of the things that has resurrected in the market lately are value stocks.
Amazingly enough, after decades of underperformance, all of a sudden value kicks up its returns and begins to show strength. That's one of those things that you need to watch. Those are one of those things that might not ever show up in your portfolio in a pie chart. You're never going to have a significant weighting to that in there. That's not one of the primary asset classes. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, that's where the returns are. That's where the money's flowing. It's like, okay, well, we can pick some of that stuff up for as long as it's going to be competitive with everyone else. And not just rely on the 80 years that says, well, you know what, that's really not that good an investment right now. It's like, well, that might have been true 50 years ago, but right now, doing pretty well.
But over the long haul, well, it's the really long haul, then value is attractive. John Templeton, who's deceased, ran some very successful Templeton funds, would say at his stockholder meetings, I don't care if you don't like the stock. You wait 10 years and I will be proven right because I bought it cheap. Well, he's willing to wait 10 years and sometimes 20 for the value stocks to work.
But it was when just they're a little early. Just a little early. Just wait a little bit. It'll be fine.
But when they're in favor and that's what people are buying and those prices are rising faster than other areas, that's stick them in the portfolio. We have no bias against value. Well, we have a bias against our laggards. Things that people don't want to own. I mean, the cyclical stuff. When cyclicals are working, own them. When they quit working, rotate into the segment that is working. And if you want to learn more about how we do that, that's what our webinars are for, to explain, help you understand that the underlying assumptions in modern portfolio theory, the balanced portfolio, concentrating risk avoidance in the bond segment of the market, is backwards. It makes no sense given current conditions. What does? Well, we'll talk about that in our webinar. You register at iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks in your email, and you'll be set to join us on December 5th, right after the show. If you can't stay for the entire show, if we don't keep you absolutely enthralled for our 45-minute presentation, you'll be able to watch it on your own time when you get the replay link. Well, let's see. One of the interesting things is that over time, the investing community has basically looked to star money managers. Peter Lynch comes to mind, or Warren Buffett. Well, if Warren's doing it, I'm going to do it. Peter bought it. I think I'll buy it in my own account. Well, he's probably the most successful fund manager under a single tenure of anybody.
He had probably the best run, yeah, the best run any professional money manager has ever had.
Well, one of the other guys that has done extremely well in the hedge fund area, which means you needed a lot of money to participate in his management, is David Einhorn. And he wrote a book calling Fooling Some of the People All of the Time, a long, short story. Well, basically, he's known for having made tons of money in his hedge fund, shorting some well-known stock, one of which was Allied Capital. But one of the things that investors typically don't have is David Einhorn's persistence.
Correct.
He believed in his bet on the collapse of Allied Capital. And he continued to bet against it for 6 years before it was proven right. What we have learned from that is that most of the time, people don't have that kind of persistence to hang through when they're wrong. So what do you do? I mean, we use a quote from John Maynard Keynes, Nobel Prize economist. We like his quote. It says, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do, sir?
Okay. Well, that's important. That's important. It's important to be able to change your mind. It's important to not be doggedly stuck in one position no matter what. Sometimes that persistence shows up as success. Sometimes it shows up as, look, you're on the wrong side of this, and at some point you have to admit, I should have done something else, but it becomes too late. And speaking of late, Don, we got to take a break here, so we're going to get out of here for this segment. I'd like to remind everyone that on December 5th, we're having our next monthly webinar. Those are generally the first Saturday of every month. Give you a market update, give you a little information about what it is we do and how we look at the market. And then we always have plenty of time for your questions. That's one of the biggest parts of our webinar. One of the biggest reasons we do them is to make sure you have time to get your questions in, questions about the market, the economy, or individual securities that you're holding. You'd like a second opinion on. We'll chart those up for you. Get them live on the screen so you can see what we're looking at, what we're thinking, and it can really bring you some clarity. You can register for those at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page, a couple of clicks, and you will be good to go. We have plenty of time, a whole segment here left to talk to you this morning. If you have a question about your portfolio, give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We would be more than happy to talk to you about it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Lone Ranger.
Well, David Einhorn could actually have used the Lone Ranger riding to his rescue a number of times.
It couldn't have hurt, yeah.
We just go back a few years to the 2016 presidential election. This guy, Einhorn, is a very successful money manager, lots of money. And at that time, in his letter to his investors, he wrote that he had added Netflix to his bubble basket because the company is poorly positioned to take advantage of the incoming president's policies, particularly tax cuts on corporate profits, because Netflix had no profits. So why would they benefit from it? Well, since then, through the end of last month, first of this month, stock's gone up 270% since he told his investors that, he was on the verge of shorting Netflix. But that's persistence. If you believe in what you're doing, you've got to be willing to bear some adversity in your position.
And he's been universally down on tech stocks right now across the board. It's just... You know, he's just not buying into it. And it's like, well, you can not believe that all you want. But when you're on the wrong side of that, there's a ton of returns you're missing because of your opinion. And that becomes the issue. And it's like, well, you know, David Einhorn, he's tenacious. He'll hang in there. And right now he's proving that even if he's on the wrong side, even if the market is telling him every day, you're wrong about this. You're costing your own firm money here. The returns are there and you're ignoring them because you don't believe they should be there. We look at that and we say, but they are there. So let's not spend a lot of time trying to worry about why are they there. If we were wrong about where the returns come from, go get some of those returns. And you know, you may sort it out later. Most of the time, no one ever really knows. People are always looking for those explanations of why something happened. The why is the least important factor. You need to know where the returns are, where the money is going, and go there too.
Well, another investor with tenacity is Warren Buffett. And when you're talking about that, it reminded me of his purchase of Coca-Cola.
Sure.
And people wanted to load up on Coke because Warren had Buffett had bought it. Now, you have to understand, Warren doesn't go to the stock market and buy stocks.
He doesn't.
He has a little more bargaining power in making a private transaction, usually with some extra kickers along the way. Coca-Cola, after he bought it, continued to decline for three more years that I know of. It may have been worse. But one of the things that has not been declining lately has been Tesla, and it's been in the news a lot. It is a stock that is now up more than 420% this year, with a slight disruption during the February-March sell-off when it was down 60%. That's usually a stomach-churning event.
That'll
for
get
most
your attention,
people.
Yeah. No matter how good the returns are, you lose 60%. That will shake some people up.
Of course, if you don't look at your account every month, you might have missed it because it was a four-week period. It dropped 60%, but it's up more than 1,400% in the past 5 years and is now going to be added to the S&P 500.
How about that?
It missed the last rotation. But S&P is not a passive index. Obviously, if they keep rotating stocks, they're doing some active management. They're just not doing it on a predetermined schedule. So it's now in the top 15 of the biggest holdings of more than 3,500 names in the U.S. stock market. And if you own a mutual fund with some sort of index to the market, you already own Tesla. So its addition to the S&P 500 is kind of
non-event. You already own it. Yeah, you're already there.
You already have some exposure to it. Well, while we're on Tesla, Jason, that waked Jason up in Tacoma. Jason, you're on the line.
Oh, yeah. How's it going?
Go ahead.
Guys?
Going good. Thanks
first
for calling.
First time listener today. I've been wanting to, I'm really into the stock market, got into the stock market on December 9th. Noticed Tesla, you know, everybody's really bullish on Tesla, but at the time, Tesla was too spendy for me, just getting into the market. And then they did the split. Still a little bit too spendy for me. But the whole EV sector in a whole is really bullish right now that I notice. You know, because on my watch list, I got a lot of electronic vehicle sectors, you know, and it's all booming right now. I mean, and another, like, Blink charging. Look at Blink. Like, that rallied. And that's another thing, you know, they're like the only one that does it in a charging sector with the EV vehicles. So, I mean, you know, I don't know.
Well, you're correct, Jason. It is a very hot piece of the market right now. And it's being backed by many, many governments who are saying, you know, in the future, we want electric vehicles in here. We're going to get off the oil burners as much as we can. So it's one of those things that is definitely looks like its time has come, and it's going to be it's a growing sector right now, not shrinking. Tesla's size is fairly amazing for what they do. The investing in Tesla is more or less investing in Elon Musk and what you think he's going to do, because the market cap is huge. It's over $400 billion company now. It's tough to justify that level for Tesla, but people just keep buying it. So that's a huge momentum buy right now.
Yeah, I think a capitalization is. Yeah, well, there's NIO, and there's a whole bunch of these. This is an area that is very young in the industry, but it's going to be interesting because Volkswagen and, every other major car manufacturer who actually knows how to deliver cars and stand behind warranties is now making big commitments to the electronic vehicle arena. And they've been forced there by Tesla, but Tesla's competition over the next couple of years is going to be massively bigger than anything they've had to deal with so far. But you're looking at a right area. Anything in the green energy area, while it does have some more significant volatility, is an area that is going to continue to receive focus. That was a good call, Jason. We're glad to have you there. Hope you're back next week. And sign up for our webinar on December 5th. You will you'll learn more about the market for somebody who's just getting started. So thanks again for being out there.
Thanks, Jason.
With that frees up a line. Number is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. Well, the companies that Jason just mentioned are ones that would probably not do well if you were applying fundamental value formulas or any kind of formula to their set of books. And there's an interesting blog regarding these formulas that we in the industry must at least have some working knowledge of, if not mastery. And it is the fact that most of what happens in the stock market is random. It's the random walk theory. That it doesn't matter whether it's the public or insiders that have information. It's reflected in the market, and from day to day, there is no predictability about what's going to happen tomorrow. The variability of future returns is unknown. We can look at history and we can make what we think are reasoned decisions. And that's the best we can do.
And that's really tough for so many investors to get their head around, that it doesn't matter how hard you work, how many things you look at, most of what happens in the market is still random. And people need to think that there's a way to, with some confidence, to know what's coming up, to know the reason why something just happened. And most of the time, it's just someone's opinion about what may have occurred. And like you talked about earlier, Don, with the vaccine, it's never one thing. It's never one thing. There's no one thing powerful enough to move the market significantly up or down. It's always a group of things that get together, and that's what when the tide gets turned. No one ever knows when that is, though, and that's why we're trend followers instead of trying to be predictors. Anything in the forecasting side is just doomed. You just cannot reliably predict the future of an organic market that is inhabited by lots of people like us that don't always do rational things. That makes it really tough.
Well, it's a blow to the ego to figure out that after all the hard work of analyzing a stock or an industry, that 90% of the outcome can be attributed to luck, Mr. Luck.
Right.
Yes,
right.
That's the reality of investing. But you wouldn't know it by listening to daily market reports, commentaries in newspaper, on TVs, websites, even on the radio. I mean, there's a lot of hype in the investment arena, But we do have a webinar where we're going to try and sort that out and give you a better understanding of the foundation of the market and how we approach the market instead of using all these formulas that in reality don't have that much impact on your outcome. Sign up for the webinar at IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. Lower left-hand corner, a couple of clicks and your email, and you will be an authorized participant. You want to talk to us during the week? 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. Lord willing, we'll be back next week.